United States Institute of Peace, along with SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124, now present their weekly podcast.
Let's turn our attention to what's happening in the Middle East. Dr. April Longley Alley, a senior expert for the Gulf and Yemen at the USIP, joins us now. Good morning, April. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
Let's talk about what's going on. I know you have been focusing on the Israel-Houthi tensions that are seeming to be heating up. What's happening? Give us the lay of the land and bring us up to speed.
I'm sure. So I guess I'll start with, what's happened basically over the last year and a half. So what we've seen is that the Houthis, who control northern Yemen, also called Ansar Allah, have been firing at ships in the Red Sea and also at Israel really ever since the Gaza war began. And those attacks have just expanded over time. They started pretty narrow in terms of in the Red Sea. You had attacks on ships that they said were associated with Israel directly, but pretty soon it was, any loose affiliation and then no affiliation at all. And then over time, it drew in the U.S. and the Europeans and the U.K. and defensive operations in the Red Sea. And then by January of 2024, you had the U.S. and the U.K. engaged in military operations in Yemen to try to deter the Houthis, as they had severely disrupted shipping through the Red Sea corridor and the Bab el-Mandeb, forcing most shippers to divert around the Cape of Good Hope. Similarly, with attacks on Israel almost immediately since October, the Houthis began to fire directly at Israel. But originally, their drones and missiles were not penetrating Israeli airspace. But then we saw at the end of 2024 in December and then early January of this year, a significant uptick in their attacks on Israel almost on a daily basis. Not causing significant damage, but still a significant uptick in attacks. And from the beginning of their attacks on these areas, so their military operations, they've said in their words that they would stop when there was a halt to the, quote, aggression against in Gaza and then a lifting of the blockade. So this has been their framing. So what we have seen since the ceasefire in Gaza was began to be implemented, that we have seen a pause. So what we do is we have a situation where there is an effective pause. There have been no strikes on Israel since the ceasefire has begun or in the Red Sea. Actually, the Red Sea attacks had been on the decline since December of last year for a kind of probably a number of reasons. Less targeting, maybe less weapons on their side. But I think it's really important to emphasize that they've also been very clear that this is a very tenuous pause. So essentially, they made an announcement. They have an internal humanitarian organization. They made an announcement that their own sanctions are lifted on all ships, with the exception of Israeli ships. So they still keep this in their pocket, even as the ceasefire is ongoing. They say that will only be lifted when all phases of the ceasefire are implemented. But they also say that they are going to monitor the ceasefire as it unfolds, and if there are violations, that they will return to military action. So this does not give enough confidence, right, for shippers to restart those voyages through the Red Sea as they were. And then also at the big picture level, I would just point out that their leader has been very clear that in their view, this is just one of many battles. So even if we have a successful ceasefire in Gaza at the moment, I mean, they view this as part of a larger struggle for Palestine. And they've been very clear that they will continue to rearm and regroup for the next battle. So it's it's a tenuous pause right now. And it's also one that is probably not enduring. This is going to be a medium and long-term threat.
There is obviously a new president here in the United States as of just last week, and there was the executive order that had been set in motion, a process to designate the Houthis as an FTO. What is the impact of this?
Yeah, that's right. So This executive order does set in a process. It's a 30-day process to evaluate, but it does seem like the FTO will be coming based on Ansar Allah, the Houthis' behavior, and also kind of the perspective here in Washington. I would just note that it's not a surprise that we have the FTO. So in the end of the last Trump administration, the Houthis were designated as an FTO, and then it was the Biden administration that came in that reversed that decision for primarily two reasons. The first was humanitarian, because the FTO can be a very blunt instrument, and Yemen is a very poor country, so it had a humanitarian effect. And the second was to give UN-backed peace process a chance to try to contain the Houthis within a peace process. And that process to try to get a peace agreement was making progress in 2022 and 2023 with something called a roadmap agreement. But really, what happened in Gaza upended those efforts. And now we have a situation where Ansar Allah is directly engaged in attacks right against U.S. Warships in the Red Sea. So the Biden administration had already designated them at the beginning of 2024 as an SDGT, a specially designated global terrorist group. And now we have the Trump administration coming in with a stronger FTO. I think a couple of points on its impact. One is that it does send a strong message to Ansar Allah that this administration is different and that they will react more strongly to their actions. I think number two, we are sure that it will put financial strain on the Houthis inside of Yemen. So some parts will not be very effective. For example, most of their leaders don't travel outside of the country or don't have external bank accounts. But insofar as the FTO puts significant pressure on the wider economy, which it will in terms of access to international banking, having access to LCs, to insurance for shippers coming in, all of these things will limit Ansar Allah's access to finances. Number three, we also know that while it will hurt Ansar Allah, it will also hurt the population of North Yemen, the areas particularly in which they control. This is a population where 80% of the population depends on humanitarian aid. It's historically been the poorest country in the Arab world, so it's really sad for Yemen and for the people there. We have a 30-day period to kind of investigate the FTO, so it'll be interesting to see if the administration is going to look at ways to try to mitigate some of those humanitarian impacts, given that the focus is pressure on Ansar Allah. I think the third point is what the administration is trying to do, which is changing Ansar Allah's behavior. And I think this is it's a question on how it will change how and if they will change their behavior. Until now, their reaction has been defiance, predictably, but it's been verbal. So they have criticized the U.S. designation, of course. Their de facto president has over the weekend sanctioned the U.S. and the U.K. It's not really clear what that means in practice. It's more symbolic. But this group's modus operandi has been to escalate, particularly militarily, when they are pressured. And so I think the effectiveness of the FTO probably over time is going to be more of a product of how it interacts with other variables and how much the Trump administration is going to cooperate and coordinate with regional allies and with Yemen to kind of get a broader package in place that really reestablishes deterrence in this country. In this context, their really deterrence has been lost, and Ansar Allah has been pushing on open doors until this point, and kind of puts together a package that has incentives and disincentives for behavior change.
Israel has been promising that the Houthis will meet the same fate as Hezbollah. I know we don't have we've got less than a minute or so left. Is this something that is possible?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Israel has struck inside of Yemen already, has retaliated five different times, and they've struck the international airport, the ports, and electricity infrastructure. These are dual-use infrastructure. Just like U.S. and U.K. strikes, it was not able to deter the Houthis. It was really the Gaza conflict that shifted to this pause. I think in Yemen, Israel is going to face a couple of challenges that are unique to Yemen, which will make that it difficult. One is the distance. This is over 2,000 kilometers away from Israel. Second is the terrain and the kind of context you're working in. This is a rugged mountainous terrain in the
Sure.
highlands. Yeah, so similar to Afghanistan, more than Gaza or Lebanon. And then also intel, Israel has been focused on Hezbollah and Hamas for decades, right? But Yemen is a new target. So getting up to
Okay.
speed on that intel will also be difficult. And from what I hear from Yemenis as well, with Israel leading a push, it's also harder for Yemenis to push back against Ansar Allah
We'll have to end
in
it
that
there,
conflict.
Dr. April Longley. Unfortunately, Ellie, thank you so much for joining us today. I know there's a lot more to unpack. We appreciate you bringing us up to speed.
This podcast has been brought to you by the United States Institute of Peace and SiriusXM's POTUS, Channel 124.